Standing by in our Wellington studio is movie reviewer Graham Tuckett. Hey there, Graham.
Oh, kia ora, Jesse. Nice to be home, mate. It's good.
Happy New Year to you, sir.
Oh,
how's things?
You.
Did you have a nice break?
I haven't really got away yet. I've got something penciled in, I think around like late February, a couple of weeks into March. Like if you get me doing a film review and I'm sort of standing on the beach at Hawhei, don't be surprised. that's my plan at the moment.
Yeah, we didn't get to any movies over the summer, but we did actually sit down for some sort of longer feature length things on on streaming services at home. But I didn't quite find what I was looking to find. I watched a couple of documentaries because I love a documentary. But You know, sometimes you sort of sit to the end of a documentary and you say,
Yeah. I think there's...
I was waiting for it to kick in there.
Oh, I mean, because of the rise of streaming services, there's such a like a voracious maw for content at the moment. The Netflix are churning stuff out as fast as they possibly can. And they sometimes, I think, they're making a series and they haven't really always got enough of a story to justify the four parts or the 12 parts or the six parts that they make. I find...
Interestingly, I saw one called Long Shot. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that one.
No.
And they made the decision to make it only 40 minutes long because it was a wonderful story, but they thought 40 minutes is all it takes to tell it, and it really benefited from it.
What was the story of Long Shot? Just sort of switching roles here.
Not at all. I came across it and they said the less you know about this documentary, the better.
Oh, okay. Yep.
So all I'll say is it is a young man who is falsely accused of murder and gets off his murder charge in about the most hilarious way you can possibly imagine.
It involves a sports fixture.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
I have seen it. It's wonderful.
Yeah.
And yes, a story, if a fiction writer wrote it, nobody would believe it. One of those ones. I
could recommend that, and that's not much of an investment. Yep. But anyway, all of which is to say that I do really appreciate you guiding us in the right direction with films, Graham, because there's nothing worse than feeling like you've wasted 2 hours.
Oh, man, so much fun. I love this gig. And we've got two documentaries today.
Right.
I was going to talk about the Eric Bana film called The Dry, and then I suddenly went, the lovely Ali did it last year. Great film, still showing all over the country if you're in the mood for a decent little psychological thriller drama, but no more about that. Two documentaries, both of which are widely available in Dawn Raid is showing everywhere, and The Painter and the Thief is showing at least in the major centres anywhere that's got a decent little cinema, and will be available to stream on the Neon platform pretty soon. Should we start with Dawn Raid?
Yeah, about which I've heard the most incredible things. I've talked to people who have been to the special screenings, and I said people were bawling their eyes out, that nobody could talk about anything else for hours, days sometimes. So what did you make of it?
I was one of those lucky people who went to a special screening here in Wellington with Oscar Keightley and Andy Moraine and Brother D in attendance, and it was a very, very moving experience. It's a hell of a film. Dawn Raid is a feature documentary on the rise of the, I'm going to say iconic, I don't like the word, but it actually is an iconic New Zealand record label, Dawn Raid. Dawn Raid had its foundation in the very late 1990s, 1998, 1999. Andy Moraine and Danny Leosave, better known today as Brother D, were both students, I think, at Manukau Polytech. They were doing a small business course. They obviously just got on straight away. Brother D at the time was working a night job as a bouncer or security at a Central Auckland strip bar. He would finish at 5 o'clock in the morning, still wearing his neat white shirt and plain black tie, get back to Mangere, and then get straight into basically commute straight to the to Manukau Polytech to go to the class. And Andy Moraine took one look at this guy who was turning up every day in black trousers, white shirt and a black tie and thought, wow, he's really serious about being a successful young businessman because he's even dressing up like this for school. So I'm going to get to know him. And the two of them bonded over a great love of like what we call golden age hip hop. The great stuff that was coming in from North America, both East Coast and West Coast in the late 90s, very early 2000s. They started a stall at the Otara Market selling T-shirts and baseball caps and general merch, and they used that to fund a fairly bare-bones recording studio.
Funny that the merch could come before the recording studio, eh?
I think maybe that's often the way. It's like, how do you raise the money to do recording, which even I mean, now you can record stuff probably more cheaply than you could 20 years ago, for sure, but it's still an expensive business. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the label, I think the label is very much the image, even over and above the sounds that it put out, or it can be. So they had, Dawn Raid became a thing even before Dawn Raid Records became a thing. The merch funded the first recordings. They put together a compilation of some of the very, very best of South Auckland talent. Early outings for people like Savage, Shay Fu signed up fairly early in the piece. Ariadna was discovered down here in Wellington, again fairly early in the piece. And before you knew it, Dawn Raid had become probably the preeminent hip-hop label down this end of the world. The success was incredible and almost, virtually immediate. It only took them about 5 or 6 years to become an overnight sensation. Mm-hmm. But then they were going to New York. They were being feted by members of Wu-Tang Clan. Inspector Deck was dropping rhymes with Scribe. Scribe with Savage and Mareko. And it just became, a really, really big deal. Like they, Dawn Raid were the preeminent hip hop label, and were getting getting some international traction as well. And then you've got there's a perfect storm, I guess. You've got the global financial crisis of 2007, 2008. You've got the rise of download culture via LimeWire a couple of years before that. You've got the attentions of the Inland Revenue Department looking at some of these fairly amateurish attempts at bookkeeping and drawing the worst possible conclusions. And a business that had great cash flow but not always great profit margins, and obviously there's a big difference. There's money in, but there's also money out, and the money out that it takes to market a recording studio, a record label, is pretty massive. So with profit margins either cut to the bone or less than, and the attentions of the IRD and a sort of international climate that had become kind of tumultuous and anti-business at that point, Dawn Raid fell over. And the documentary is very much the story of the rise and the fall, and then, of course, because a good film's got to have a great ending, of the rise again. It's a film full of amazing, larger-than-life characters, happy to talk very, very openly and honestly and fairly explicitly about exactly what went on. There's a very few times in all documentaries that are people talking to camera, you get a sense that there's a little place there where somebody doesn't want to go, and there's probably a bit more that they could have said about that and they're choosing not to. But very seldom. Like, I walked out of that thinking I feel like I've heard very much almost the complete true story of this record label. And it's just a great Aotearoa story.
Notice anything about the direction of Oscar Keightley, because it was his debut.
His debut as documentary director. I think what I really loved, I wrote this up for Stuff and Dom Post a few weeks back. What I really loved about Oscar Keightley's direction, I think, because Oscar Keightley's a very, very accomplished screenwriter, and he really knows how to lay out a story and how to make a narrative work, not just in a kind of this happened, then this happened, then this happened form, but he knows exactly when to sort of look ahead, when to flash back, when a story that might seem to be going nowhere in the first third of the film suddenly pays off massively in the last third of the film. Like, there's a lot of script writing engineering, a lot of script writing mechanics has gone into the assembly and the edit of this film. And it's it keeps it a compelling watch. It keeps the twists and turns coming. Also, there's nothing more dull than a film that sort of starts at, well, a documentary especially, that starts at the beginning and then moves to the end, and it's just chronological order. First they did this, then they did that, then they did the other. Whereas this is quite happy to start at a midpoint, skip ahead to a bit of a conclusion, and then look back and start talking about, right, how did we get there? It's a very, very smart piece of writing. It's so smart that you'll barely notice it's being done. It's not obvious at all, but it's really good storytelling. It's a scriptwriter's approach to a story.
And a pretty essential part of New Zealand history, at least New Zealand cultural history.
Anyone who's interested at all in the New Zealand music scene, no matter what genres you think you like or don't like, this is a tale about how, firstly, exactly how to start a record label in New Zealand, then exactly how not to start a record label in New Zealand, and then how to start a record label in New Zealand again. No matter what music you're into, whether you're one of those people that think they don't like hip-hop, there'll be a lot here to admire and respect and maybe open your ears and start to appreciate as well. It's just a darn good time. It's a really good It's a great, solid New Zealand film that, whether you think you're in the wheelhouse for hip-hop or not, get behind it. It's a good watch.
It's called Dawn Raid. And then we're going to Norway for a documentary which came out last year and is screening around New Zealand now, The Painter and the Thief.
Yeah, this was, I think, literally the last thing I saw this year, or maybe the very first film I saw, last year. The Painter and the Thief is it's made by a Norwegian filmmaker working in Scandinavia. This film director, Benjamin Ree, he had an idea that he wanted to make a film about the business of art heists. And so he was like scanning the newspapers and keeping an eye on his social media streams, I guess, for any art thefts that had happened. And then, sure enough, one turns up in Oslo. A woman by the name of Barbara Kisakova. The gallery she was exhibiting in got smashed and grabbed, so a couple of young guys went through the back door, oblivious to the fact there were CCTV cameras everywhere. They weren't even wearing masks, and obviously they're both very well known to the local constabulary, who picked them up in a matter of hours. But they'd gone in there and picked up these two major oil canvases by this artist, Barbara Kisakova. One of the young men was Carl Bertel Nordland. Like, he was afflicted with, he was addicted. He was just living not living a great life at all. He was absolutely just torn to pieces by drug addiction issues. When we first meet him on camera, he's been just hollowed out by drug addiction. He can't remember the heist at all, has no idea why he did it except that he liked the look of the painting, has no idea where the paintings went, and he's not just being disingenuous, he genuinely just cannot string two words together or remember what he was doing there on the day of the theft. It's only when he sees the CCTV footage, he goes, oh my God, that's me. You know, that's the state that he's in. So this artist, Barbara Kisakova, decides to go along to the courthouse and watch the proceedings. And Norwegian court security is kind of lax, but she walks up to this young man, the thief, introduces herself and asks him why he did it. And they get talking. And somehow, over the course of the next couple of days and weeks and months, they strike up a friendship, which results in, she says, as part of your rehabilitation, I want to take you into my studio. I will show you my practice, wow. and we'll do some painting together.
Yeah.
And she gets him to pose for portraits that she does. And firstly, she's a fantastic painter. I can't believe I hadn't heard of her, and she doesn't have an international profile, because her work is astonishing, beautiful, beautiful, classical oil portraiture. Over the course of the next 3 years with this documentary maker, Benjamin Ree, obviously thanking all the angels he's got for this story that's unfolding in front of him, over the next 3 years, a great friendship develops. And then the young man, Carl Bertel Nordland, he enters rehabilitation. He gets off of the drugs that are afflicting him. He serves some prison time. He gets into a fairly serious car crash, and she, Barbara, is there with him for all of it, for his rehabilitation and for his going straight. And then as he gets up on his feet and becomes a very literate, very well-spoken, very together young man with a life to live and a future to have, she begins to experience some quite devastating emotional problems. And very subtly, you find the roles get reversed. Now, I walked into this like 15 minutes in. I was thinking, I'm liking this, but it's a bit of a what we call a white savior film. You know, the middle class, well-to-do person comes in and picks somebody up out of the gutter and makes them well, you know? And it turns out to be a complete inversion of that story, and I loved it for that. It's a surprising film. Trust me, I haven't spoiled it in any way at all. There's nothing here you can't see in the trailer. But you will be amazed at the way that it goes, the depth of the friendship that develops between these two. The ending is blindsiding and gobsmacking and will just absolutely floor you. It's a story I just did not see coming. I didn't think I'd be giving anything a 5-star review, but before January was even over this year. But this was the first 5-star review of the paper this year. And I know this will be in my top 10 for 2021 already. This is The Painter and the Thief. It is just a
great,
it's really, really, really good time.
So check your local sort of, art house style cinema, Rialto Newmarket.
Rialto Newmarket, the Lighthouse chain here in Wellington. And I checked this morning, and Christchurch Dunedin all had screenings as well. Or Canterbury Otago had screenings. So that's wonderful. The Painter and the Thief. Cannot recommend it highly enough. And likewise, Dawn Raid, you know, two great true stories.
cool to chat with you. Great to have you back on the show. Graham Tuckett's returning for 2021, reviewing movies. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
No, you too. Thank you.